and empower women to lead. I'm your host, Kenzie Taylor, cybersecurity queen, foodie, and Miss Maryland 2023. Let's get to the episode.
Hello, everyone. Today we have a very special guest. We have Tina Williams-Caroma. I consider her to be a cybersecurity queen, also a technology queen. But she's the founder of two companies, is that right?
Three, actually, but we'll stick with the two now.
Oh, my goodness. Three?
Yeah.
Which was your first?
So T-Secure was the first. And then I spun out CyDeploy and CySkills from T-Secure just to have their own dedicated focus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And how many years ago did you launch T-Secure?
So T-Secure is 10 years old now. That's in terms of running it full time. It's 10 years old. Yeah.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Yeah,
That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Did you ever envision yourself being a business owner when you were a kid?
You know, actually, yeah. My first foray into entrepreneurship is when I was 7. So
Wow. That
was, it wasn't tech, but my dad was on this military base, and I saw that golfers would hit these golf balls into this creek, dirty little area that I loved to play in as a kid. And I never saw, of course, any grown-ups really coming down there. So in my head, I was thinking, they probably don't want to come down here to get these golf balls. And since my friends and I are already down here, we can capitalize on this. So my first venture was a business that involved taking the golf balls that were hit into this dirty little creek area, washing them off, and selling them back with lemonade. So
Wow. That
was the first venture, yeah. And then I had a pet sitting business, a babysitting business. The pet sitting one was, that was one that helped me to understand stakeholders. So little whining dogs at night, my parents were not about that life, right? They didn't let us have dogs.
And so
they were like, yeah, no, that business is getting shut down. So pet sitting business was the shortest lived, but you know, early lessons learned. Yeah.
So what do you think makes you want to be an entrepreneur? Is it just a drive to be in charge, or do you want to make a change?
Yeah, I really think it's about creativity and being able to come up with solutions to solve problems. I have this little mug at my house that has my name and like the definition of Tina. And, you know, there's probably a million definitions depending upon, I guess, who you ask in the way of putting a poem to it. But one of the lines in there is, where there's a challenge, that's where you belong. And I think that's It's not like I like problems, right? I'm with anybody else where it's just like, ugh. But at the same time, I like the opportunity to see a problem or a challenge and then be able to come up with a solution to address it. And I think that's what's really exciting to me about entrepreneurship. The other thing is around ownership, not even necessarily being in charge per se, but being able to own your destiny, being able to own the ideas, the opportunity to pursue those ideas, see how they work out, what may fail, what may work.
Yeah.
That's what's really attractive to me about entrepreneurship.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So can we go back a little bit? First, I want you to share a little bit about each company,
okay,
and then I want to get into your background.
Okay. So we'll start with T-Secure. It's a services company that's really focused on helping organizations to create and maintain effective cybersecurity programs. So that includes, both the technical aspects, but in particular, the governance. When I was doing a lot of teaching at the university level, what I'd find is individuals would be coming to get their master's in cyber. They were very technically proficient and sound. A lot of them already had careers and experience, so this was a credential being added. But what I found myself having to regularly talk about with students is ensure that whatever technical solution that you're bringing, you are making a recommendation in context of the business. Is this a small business or is this a large business? What is their budget like? What's their environment like? Some tools work better or aren't as affordable depending upon the context in which you're talking about. So that's T-Secure. One of the problems that I noticed throughout my cyber career, to include with T-Secure, is that there was always this friction between the CISO or security lane and the IT or infrastructure lane. And that particular friction was around POAMs, plan of action and milestones, security weaknesses, vulnerabilities, where the security teams would find the issues, they would prioritize which ones needed to get fixed, but they weren't actually responsible for fixing them. They had to hand that over to the infrastructure IT teams that had the responsibility of testing them and implementing them. The challenge is that those two teams are largely day-to-day measured by different metrics. So on the security team, they want to make sure a breach is avoided at all costs. While the CIO and the infrastructure lane certainly has that as a focus or a priority, their day-to-day is system uptime. And frankly, they're more afraid of a system going down because of a patch or a security change being made than they are afraid of like some breach that maybe could happen in the future. So the challenge is that you end up with this patch debt or change debt, for lack of a better word. And the infrastructure teams are like, get in line, change. We'll make it when we have time to test it and then roll it out. And that could be months and sometimes even years, right? You read about these breaches where it's some vulnerability that's 3 years old and you're thinking, why was the hacker able to get in your system from a vulnerability that was 3 years old? And so that was the impetus for SciDeploy, right? Like it was, well, how can we speed up the time in which IT or infrastructure teams can get confident in making a patch or change, confident that there won't be a spike in help desk calls, confidence that there won't have to be rollbacks, and confidence that there won't be system downtime. And so SciDeploy really focuses on expediting that entire testing process so that infrastructure and IT teams can quickly test a patch or a configuration change and understand the functional impact. So that was the impetus for SciDeploy and pulling that out as a separate product. SciSkills is really an on-demand training platform. Really the vision and focus around that is not everybody is going to be a cybersecurity professional like as their career, but they do need to have a certain cyber awareness or training just because cybersecurity is becoming a discipline that everyone needs to have some working knowledge of. And so what does the HR professional need to understand and know about cybersecurity? Well, if they're the ones that are the gatekeepers for getting talent in the door, they need to be proficient enough to be able to identify good talent to bring in the door. And that's across the board. What do board of directors need to understand and know about cybersecurity? So really, SciSkills is focused on that awareness piece and also for those that do want to become professionals, getting them started. So one of the questions I get asked regularly is, well, if I want to get into the cyber field, how do I do that? So because I was like having that conversation so many times, I was like, you know what, to scale this better, I'm just going to create like a quick course on becoming a cybersecurity professional. So that's one of the courses that's on SciSkills.
Oh, great.
And it's a free offering, right? So, but I really want to build upon that, have visions for each of these ventures, but you can't do everything in the same day. So I'm full-time focused on SciDeploy, T-Secure, have a leader that's leading that day-to-day now. But still a subject matter expert for T-Secure. And then SciSkills is working with, I have a business partner that I brought in. So he's the operations side, so doing more of the day-to-day. Yeah, at any time, like all of these are all on my mind. They all are in like the cybersecurity technology field, but again, can't be like full steam ahead for all three at the same time. So just kind of have to balance my time accordingly. Yeah.
Right. I feel like you're preaching to the choir, especially with SciDeploy. Yeah. I used to work with a government client and I would track POAMs.
Yes.
And it took a very long time to go ahead and remediate a lot of them. So.
And it was, did you have to pass it over to like the IT?
Yeah, I worked for the CIO and we were just going back and forth all the time.
Yeah, so. All the time. Yeah. Yeah.
There's definitely a need for that.
Yeah.
And you mentioned you're a professor. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So I'm still, I haven't actively taught probably in several years, but yes, for UMBC, my alma mater, I'm an adjunct instructor for them. And I taught I think it's Cybersecurity 101 or Intro to Cyber, forget the exact name of the class now. And then also risk management and compliance, legal aspects of cybersecurity. And then I created a special topics course around insider threat. And so those were the courses that I taught different semesters when I was actively teaching. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Wait, so where are you from? What inspired you to get into cybersecurity in general?
So I'm a military brat. Most of my dad's stations were in the South, so southern states, Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, Virginia, et cetera. But he also had a brief tour over in Germany. Loved that. That's where I learned to ski, was in a ski club, visiting different countries, was like going to different states here in the U.S. So very broad exposure in that way. I wasn't specifically technical minded per se, like as a kid. It wasn't like I was the 5-year-old building computers. We did have our Atari, to date myself a little bit. Anytime I was doing my marketing for my businesses, it was printing things out on a dot matrix printer with the perforated paper on the side, right? Again, dating myself. But I did take a class when I was in 10th grade. This was Pascal programming. Did not like it. I was like, oh, this isn't for me. But I gave it another shot after my junior year in high school. I got a chance to participate in this summer high school apprenticeship research program.
Wow.
And at NASA. And I made
Casual.
Sure that I... Right. Yeah, I know. At NASA. Yeah. Really great program. And I requested to do an internship that related to computers and technology in that way. And the reason why I had given it like a second chance is because, unfortunately, starting my junior year playing basketball, I'd torn my ACL and my hoop dreams were getting dashed, right? And so I spent it, right? I was like, oh. And I had said prior to that experience that I wanted to be in physical therapy, but after having to be in the physical therapist's office for my knee, like day after day, I was like, I don't want this as a career. So, you know, divine intervention perhaps to give me that career exposure up front and early. And I was like, nope. So let's try computers again. So yeah. So that experience, that's what shaped me in saying, okay, I think I want to pursue computer science in undergrad. And then I saw the movie The Net with Sandra Bullock, again, dating myself. But she's like this cyber girl woman on the beach coding and doing her thing. And it's like, what career is that? You know, and so some cybersecurity stuff. So that actually is what specifically turned my mind into like a cybersecurity sort of realm or role. When I first started my career at Lockheed Martin, I was doing software development, but it was in a rotational leadership program, and I got a chance to rotate into network security stuff, and it was game over after that. Then it was just like all this cybersecurity different roles throughout my career from then. Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. What a resume.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you're a woman of color in cybersecurity. Yeah. I can say that I've had my own challenges being a woman of color.
Yep.
What was it like going to that camp or being part of that program with NASA, right?
Yeah.
You were so young.
Yep.
Were you alone? How did you feel?
Yeah, you know, I think what I really liked about it is even then they had a vision of diversity being an asset to technology. And so I had the chance to be amongst all sorts of individuals, other girls, was a girl at the time, other people of color from different communities. So I really enjoyed that experience because I not only got tech, but I got it in context of diversity as an asset. And so that really, I think, helped shape a foundation of confidence for me. It was almost my expectation that tech is better when diverse and when it's valued, right? Like, so that is how I came into a technology career. And I think having that kind of support early on in like setting the expectation was really beneficial and helpful. Because certainly there was still diversity in tech in college, but once I was in like my computer science classes and things like that, it was definitely a bit more homogenous. Sure. Yeah, the benefit of going to UMBC is that as an institution, they also value, you know, diversity in tech and things like that. So I'm quite sure it's not as bad as it could have been or perhaps is at other institutions, because there is this pervasive focus and prioritization on diversity as an asset. But there was it wasn't like I was sitting in a room full of, you know, other Black women. I could probably count, I definitely could count on one hand the number of women in the classroom, and certainly, you know, the number of Black women. I was probably the only one. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was one other one. But yeah, there wasn't a lot of me. I think, again, the confidence aspect put into me, where I got exposed to diverse groups of people so early on, being a military brat and just having to adjust and change as you move a lot. I think that that was actually really beneficial for me in choosing a highly technical career where there wasn't a lot of me necessarily around. I think I had a good foundation of confidence that didn't necessarily make me by default question my belonging in the room. I felt like that was a, nope, yeah, I'm fine here. You know, yeah, I don't see a lot of me, but that's okay. I'm good. Yeah. So I think that that has, and I've needed that, because there have definitely been things that have happened, you know, and continue to happen that can chop away at confidence. Right. Yeah. Yep.
Right. Well, how have you dealt with those incidents where they were being chopped away?
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of, I think my faith has a lot to do with that when I encounter things in present time. I mean, being a Black tech founder in general is has its own challenges when you're talking about services. It's another challenge when it's product and there's, you know, money and fundraising and investment and things like that that you have to pursue, because it's constantly putting yourself in front of people for potential rejection and no's. But I think, because I am very focused on staying aligned spiritually, like, is this my call? Is this my best way to impact society and to bring the gifts and talents that I have been given to use them to the fullest extent? So my choice of entrepreneurship is, I and I told my husband this, he giggled at me, but I was like, I feel like I'm just as like righteous in what I'm doing as any pastor of any church. Like, I am seeking God about my gifts and talents and how best to use those in a way that exemplifies who I'm called to be. And so when I'm in these different scenarios that could chop away at it, I just come back to the drawing board of, okay, if this is where God has called me to be, hell, high water, this is where I'm staying, right? And I'll get the resources, I'll be provided what I need, the partnerships, the connections to do what I'm supposed to do here. Yeah.
Ah, I love that. Yeah, and I needed to hear that today.
Yeah, good.
That's incredible advice. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk
absolutely.
To me a little bit about the diversity at your company, right? Do you focus on diversity?
Yeah. So for me, it is something that I don't, because I think so much of like recruiting and people being put into place is about your social network and social access, like, I socialize amongst a diverse set, right? Like, and so at T-Secure, for example, you know, the number of individuals that we have there that are women, that are people of color, that are even veterans, it really hasn't even had to be like so intentional, because when I'm asking around about, oh, do you know like a person that you could recommend, right? Like, and because like in a social context, people oftentimes have connections like where they feel the most comfortable, and it tends to be a bit more homogenous. And I think that from a human nature perspective, it works out well when you socialize amongst a diverse group of people. I think the challenge comes with other companies when they take that approach, when it's not a diverse by default and they just check with their own closed circles. And a lot of times I think it's just by that default of human nature. It might not even be specifically trying to be racist as much as it is, you're going to have to be a bit more intentional about reaching beyond an immediate circle because there has been such a challenge historically in making sure that there's equitable access, that kind of perpetuates itself when you think of like some companies and individuals and who their close circles are that they've networked in. If you've had generations of lack of access and we're just now starting to bring in some of that diversity and broad access, there has to be a certain level of intentionality to reach beyond just immediate circles to make sure that everyone's social and professional context is broader than just who looks like them, right? Right. And so,
that's a great point.
Yeah. And so I think that when you look across like the two, the companies that I have, you'll see a lot of diversity by race, by gender, veteran status. And I'm really excited, you know, about that and proud of it. And it is something that as we scale, I want to make sure that there are provisions in place to continue with that, right? Like in talking to my team, even about the use of AI, right? Like I'm very conscious of that when we use that for resumes. Read a recent article and shared it with my team on the T-Secure side that does the recruiting and making sure that, hey, look at this article. It was calling out how people with certain names or in certain zip codes were by a study, it was the same resume that was provided to teams, but different names were put on the resume. And certain names that had that were more Black sounding it was like, no, we don't think that person is qualified. But then the same resume with like a more, you know, neutral sounding name, they're like, yeah, this person looks like we should consider them. And that wasn't like just a one-off. Like statistically, that is how like the resumes and the proficiency of people, and this is just by names and zip codes, like where they live, right? Like, so I made sure my team was aware of this article and making sure that they were conscious of this bias in case there was an unconscious bias that could be going into them. And I made sure those responsible for recruiting had that article and were aware and conscious of that. That way they can consciously make sure that they aren't screening with that in the back of their mind. So I think even with the broad social and professional contexts and circles that I have and how diverse they are, I still think as you build and scale and it's like just beyond you who might be in control of hiring and recruiting and screening, there need to be processes in place to make sure that that's scalable and that it's being done intentionally. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And just being at a large company, I've had a lot of trainings on unconscious bias and how it can affect even your feedback.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
So I love that so much.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just thinking a lot about you scaling your company, right? Yeah. So what are your goals for the future? And also, could you clarify if you work with government clients or if you work with the private sector?
Yes. T-Secure, we have had contracts with government, federal, state, and local, as well as commercial customers, so private sector. And then with SciSkills, it's largely been commercial sector, and same with SciDeploy currently. But with SciDeploy and SciSkills, looking to diversify, we have a pending contract, for instance, with SciDeploy. For a government customer. Yeah. And so definitely want to be accessible. I think it's a horizontal problem that all three companies are addressing. It's just a matter of being disciplined about how we kind of take a strategic approach to entering each of those markets. In terms of vision for the future, it really is focused on continuing to grow in a disciplined and focused manner. But scaling and doing things with excellence is always on my mind. So with each of the companies, there's a focus on just really solid business, right? Profitability, good metrics, making sure it's a solid company. Mm-hmm. Cytoploy in particular, I built to be a growth stage, and I'm building it to be a growth stage company. So that is one where, you know, build it, scale, and an exit, right? Like that's the focus for Cytoploy. And so I'm building with the end in mind, right? Like having conversations, looking at who our possible acquirers are, who would we want that to be, how should that affect our strategy and approach now, mm-hmm. today. For T-Secure, it's less about like a fast growth exit per se, but it is something that I want to be able to build and scale. I think the need for organizations to have affordable and accessible, meaning understandable, cyber governance programs and approaches is not going away. I think it needs to be there. And I think there with T-Secure, it's really a focus on how do I... you know, clients in particular, when I was doing the consulting, would focus on, well, you break it down really well. You make it not intimidating. I feel like I can ask the questions that I should ask. And so I think for T-Secure, it's really on how do I make sure that that same feeling or sentiment and approach is scaled. So when it's not just me, but it's reflected in everybody that is delivering services for T-Secure, that is the sentiment that they feel comfortable, that they can ask questions, that it's understandable and the like. And so, I think for Cyscale's really looking at how we can incorporate and use like AI and machine learning to further the vision and goal for Cyscale. So that is both my partner and I there. We're continuing to hone and refine our AI and machine learning skills and understanding so that we can decide on how to augment our product and offerings in that way to take advantage of those technologies.
Right.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a great point. I feel like everyone in technology, because it's constantly evolving, yes. we all have to study and yes. stay up to date.
Yes.
How do Definitely. You do that?
Yeah. You know, I think it really helps that I'm naturally very curious. I think for me, it is... I have to watch myself going down like rabbit holes because it's like when I see something new, I'm like, huh, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I start Googling like a certain article. And next thing I know, I look up, it's an hour later. I'm like, Tina, that was not on the list for today. Professional curiosity is one of the values that I have identified for T-Secure, for Cytoploy. And so I think that I really tell people that there should be a professional curiosity that you have. If you're not curious about how could this be done better, what else mm-hmm. is being done, what's next, then you might want to reexamine whether you're pursuing the right career. It might not be wow. something that you can like wake up and change tomorrow, mm-hmm. but I do think you should question whether or not you're dedicating your time to the right career if you don't have that professional mm-hmm. curiosity. And I saw that early on for me as a developer. When I would develop software, I would go to peer reviews where they review your code and they give feedback. And I remember one peer review session in particular where the feedback was, you know, Tina, you could make this more efficient if you did it like X, Y, and Z. And I remember exactly what the comment was. And I also remember in my mind, I was thinking, but does it work? That I knew that wasn't like long-term software development, me being like the developer in front of the keep like banging out like the code and stuff was not going to be a long-term career because that's the wrong question that I was asking. And so when I made that shift, because I was in that rotational program, when I made that shift to network security, oh, I was like, I mean, all questions, all curious, really? Sought out a mentor, wanted to know more, pivoted into another rotation that still dealt with security, except in computer forensics, and wanted to know more. And right. And so I was like, okay, now I'm in the right career. So I think it makes it a lot easier to kind of stay up on stuff. when you have that, when you're in a career where that professional curiosity is really stroked. Yeah. Yeah. Stroked. One of those two. Yeah.
No, I completely understand and resonate with that. I think that's when I figured out I really liked supply chain cybersecurity. It's because I wanted to learn more about it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yep.
But in terms of your three companies, how do you manage success? Is it a dollar amount to you, or do you have specific goals every year?
Yeah, so it really is about having a healthy company. Like, that's what I'm really focused on, right? Like, it's back to the basics of, like, profit and loss. And while venture companies and product companies definitely have had a history of, like, growth at all costs, right? Like, top line, not even necessarily looking at profitability. I think that that is starting to course correct now, even in the venture capital world, where the companies that have just a good, solid profit, loss, balance sheet, like your three financial statements, right? Like, I am very much so on, like, financial statement. I'm also a risk taker, right? Some risks pan out and some of them don't, right? And so certainly have taken risks, like, and some of them have worked and some haven't, right? Like, so even now it's about, like, okay, that risk didn't work, let's get back. So my core is always focused on having a solid business that is profitable, right? And making sure that is like an anchor while taking risks. So go on this experiment. Okay, if the experiment starts jacking up the balance sheets too much or for too long, okay, might need to rein that back. Experiment didn't quite work that way. Let's come back to the drawing board, right? So I think for me, it's always like a balance of, like, solid business, financial, sound decisions. But it also is risk taking, like, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? Like, so sometimes you have to make that risk, and some risks pay off and some of them don't, right? Like, in, I think especially even being like a tech product founder, right? Like, a lot of them don't necessarily work out, right? You raise money, you have this idea, you vet the market, et cetera. Some things are in your control with business. A lot of things aren't necessarily in your control. I couldn't, you know, take like a crystal ball and be like, oh, around 2022 is when all this free, easy money from a venture capital perspective is going to suddenly disappear. The world is going to change drastically. And suddenly it's not going to be growth at all costs. And you're going, right?
I wish we could do that.
Right, exactly. So I feel like there's a balance in it, right? And I think that it's also, like, coming back to this notion of, like, confidence, right? Every decision isn't going to necessarily pan out the way that you want, right? Some risks that you take are just going to fail poorly. And it's like, you can't necessarily, like, translate that into, oh, I'm a failure and I'm, you know, it, and that can be a challenge, right? Because it's just like, is this for me? This wasn't a great decision. But, you know, I feel like some of that is, like, what I'm even working through now, right? Like, okay, this didn't quite work. That wasn't quite what I thought the market was. That, you know, and so it's like having to almost do like a reset, right? Like, and I feel like I'm in somewhat of a reset season now where it's just like, okay, let me take a step back. Let's, like, look at this from, like, a clean slate approach and analyze all the assumptions that I made, right? All of the data that I looked at to make me go in this particular direction. Let's take another look at it. And I think it takes a certain amount of bravery and courage to be able to kind of take that step back as well and just say, let's re-examine, right? Mm-hmm. And still keep the confidence to be able to take another risk, right, in the future. Yeah.
That's very helpful. Especially, I think, for our women listeners who may not have decided on their goals for the year.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to take a little step and talk about your child. You mentioned you have a toddler, right?
Yeah, I do.
How old is he or she?
Yep. He is, he'll be 3 in May. So a little over 2.5. And,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. I love being a mom. I love kids even before, like, my passion, probably that even exceeds, like, cyber and tech and things like that, is definitely children, protecting and positioning them for their best future. You know, teaching Sunday school and children's church and volunteering and tutoring. So all of that has been a part of, like, just, you know, just my existence, right? Like, and so, you know, so now bring that into having a child of my own, definitely a mama bear, like have the sweatshirt and everything for it. but it's so much fun, like getting absorbed in his world. You know, we, my husband and I, like on the weekends, we have like a sitter, that comes to house like during the day, like to manage that. And so, you know, we both have like time with him, like during the week, of course, but like, we both have like our dedicated days, like for him. So mine is Saturday. So it's like mommy and baby day on Saturdays. And then like my husband has, Sundays. And so like on the mommy and baby days, it's so much fun. Like it's the park and seeing the world through his eyes. It's like, aww, everything is a question and touching this and that. And I can see so much of my curiosity. Like my parents tell me stories about how I was a kid. I see that in him. Right. And I'm like, little boy, I'm the right mommy for you. I see where you're going. I see, aww, you. But yeah, it's fun. I love it. I That's really, really special. Love it. Yes. Yeah.
How do you balance being a mom with being an entrepreneur?
Yeah. I mean, I think one really tangible example is, my husband, he gets to work remotely as well. Right. And so it's, you know, he has greater flexibility and leave than I do. So a lot of our family vacations are typically some like entrepreneurship trip that I'm taking. Mm-hmm. And so we all go and then, aww, yeah. And so fun. Like, yeah, yeah. So, you know, we work it in that way, you know, and our son gets to explore and see different things. We get to be together as a family, you know, and work still gets done. So I think it's, you know, really in being creative. I definitely think that being an entrepreneur, takes having like the right partner as well. I was an entrepreneur when I met my husband, and, you know, he could see, like, you know, like all the madness that goes on with entrepreneurship, and he loves it. Like, he has the same mindset, like around like ownership and, you know, like wealth building and legacy, you know, creation and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really helpful, because like when things get, you know, challenging and like he's like, I know it's tough, I know it's crazy, but, you know, this is important, right? And so yeah, I think in being able to balance that, it definitely takes like a partnership approach, right? Like in flexibility, mm-hmm. Everything is like by calendars. He gets annoyed with me. I'm like, baby, is it on my calendar? He's like, why are you trying to schedule me like an employee? I'm like, I'm not trying to schedule you like an employee, but if it's not on the calendar, it's a very high chance that I'm not going to get it done. I'm going to overlook it. So, you know, it's like, yeah, yeah. Like, where is it? And likewise with him now, right? If he's got a dental appointment at this time, or like some medical appointment, or he has to go in the office for some conference or whatever, like we look at the calendar. Okay. Like, he has that. So let me schedule around this. So I think it just takes a lot of, flexibility and an understanding. I think you do have to have like priorities and limits. Like, as an entrepreneur, you could risk like everything, right? Like, everything could get like, you know, gambled onto like the venture, right? And so I think certainly you have to have a certain amount of risk, but I think that you also need to have a very clear understanding of like what your boundaries are. I think boundaries in life are another big part of being able to manage both entrepreneurship as well, mm-hmm. as like family. You have to establish within yourself, like in your mind, and as a family, like, okay, these assets are off limits. Like, mm-hmm. we will take a risk with this until this point. And after this point, risk over, right? Like, we're not, mm-hmm. dipping into these funds, right? And so I think that's also a part of just understanding like what your limits and bounds are for family and for business. And I think that's a part of like what helps to, I think, keep things orderly and sane. Yeah.
Well, a question for you, yeah. because some women have experienced some sort of discrimination while being pregnant and going on maternity leave at the office.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they're not considered for promotions. Yeah. Maybe it's just considered a bad thing that they're taking, yep. out for maternity leave.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
How does that factor in with you? How do you feel about that? And how should women, I guess, stay strong and continue, yeah. to fight the good fight?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I think companies really need to understand that like such a significant milestone is actually an opportunity for like greater organization and focus. Like, I know when I was preparing, for having my son and was pregnant. Like, I was like, okay, so I know that I didn't really have like maternity leave as an entrepreneur, but I had maternity less, right? Like, so instead of working like 60, you know, plus hours in a week, it was like, I can only work 40, right? And so it became like, okay, what do I need to have in place? What kind of structure? What other documents? Who else might I need to bring on the team? You know, so I think even with like larger companies, like for women that are working in a corporate context, I think it's a great opportunity to say, hey, if I'm not going to be here for a certain period of time or not be as available, what does that need to look like? What kind of organization and structure do I need to bring to the team and the group? What do I have in my head that's not documented that needs to make its way to a document? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a really great opportunity to kind of get that structure and like documented brain trust, and even optimize certain processes, right? Like, how can I make this run and function well, even with a reduced like availability for a while? So I think that that's one way to think about it. Also, I think it's like you're pregnant, and while that is a like technically a disability that could get an accommodation, right, from like a
From an
HR perspective, it's not like your mind is like, you know, disabled or whatever, right. You know, and I think that by having, you know, even outside of like pregnancy, by having an approach where you're looking at an employee from like a whole person, I think that like when you offer that kind of flexibility, sometimes as a small business, the best thing we can offer is flexibility, because we don't always have like, oh, like the richest of benefits all the time, right? Like certainly have like the basics and stuff, but it's not like, oh, and as a perk, look, we're gonna, you know, I don't know, send you on a retreat for a week, you know. Mm-hmm. As like some maybe larger, you know, companies could have. But I think that one thing that employees that I've seen appreciate is flexibility. Can I have the flexibility if I need to run my child to an appointment to, you know, maybe work less this day because I want to make a sporting event? Or, you know, hey, it's... you know, lie to you not, like one employee, like during ski season, like there's certain hours like that I really want to be able to be on the slopes. If he's developing, you know, frankly, you don't necessarily need to be available during these particular hours. If you want to develop at night to get this thing out and it makes you a happier employee to be able to like go ski like during like these hours during the day, go ski, right? Like, so I think that like having a certain amount of flexibility for pregnancy or just other life things that people have. I know I got that early. This was like law school. When I was going to law school, like my manager was working for a law.
What? Law school?
Yeah.
You didn't mention
I'm an
that.
Attorney. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Casual.
We can explain. Yeah.
Wow.
That's funny. Yeah. But yeah, like he had a certain, like my partner over the account at the time was flexible with me, where he was like, you know what, Tina, if the clients are happy and they're getting what they need, I don't need to see you every day. This changed from me having to go to Reston, Virginia, and then go to law school in downtown Baltimore 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. Not having to do that was like, I mean, I probably would have quit law school if he had been like one that wasn't flexible. And this was like a dream and a goal, right? Like much in the way that people want to build their family, et cetera. The flexibility that he gave me just made me work harder out of appreciation for the fact that I had that kind of flexibility. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure clients weren't just like good, they were happy, right? Yeah. Like, and so I think that that is an opportunity for companies to have employees that work with an even greater level of like intensity and appreciation, because they feel like somebody has their back and is looking out for their goals and their interests as well. So that would be like my answer around like companies, and then also for like women, like you got to keep an eye on like your dreams, right? Mm-hmm. Like in making sure that you don't necessarily put something off that is like really something you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, that's kind of like a boundary, like for me, if it doesn't seem to fit here, start finding institutions where it does fit and can accommodate your dream. Yes.
Okay, just two more quick questions before we close out. Mm-hmm. One, can you tell us all of your degrees? Yes. Law school, what?
That's funny.
And also, can you mention your certifications as well?
Yes, yes. So my undergrad is a bachelor's in science and computer science. Okay. I have a master's in management with an e-business focus. I did that as a part of a leadership program with Lockheed Martin. So that's from Rensselaer. And then I am a licensed attorney. So I'm licensed in Maryland. Wow. I went to law school. Really, the way in which I've used that so far is largely as almost like in-house counsel, CEO/in-house counsel, right? Like for reviewing stuff.
That was very smart.
Yeah. But like my career down the road, like I'm definitely, justice is like core for me. Children, justice are two very core things. And so I'm definitely interested in being able to really defend and pursue justice for communities that have had lack of access, that have been disenfranchised, etc. There is definitely that bone in me. So I'm focused in this lane, cyber business entrepreneurship now, but I always have like my eye on like, this is what I'm building towards. And like, this is what's next. Yeah.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
I'm very interested in data privacy. And eventually I think I want to get into data privacy law.
Yes.
So maybe our paths will intersect.
Yes. Yes, exactly. There is a lot, especially with like AI and data and training and ethic. Technology is only going to, I think the uses of it and how pervasive it is throughout society is only going to necessitate like more of a governance legal structure. Yeah.
Buckle up.
Yeah. Yep. Buckle up. That's right. Yeah.
And lastly, do you have a role model?
Role model. I have a lot of mentors, right? I really believe in the biblical scripture, in the multitude of counselors, there's safety, right? And so I really try to put myself around people who have been where I'm trying to go, and are doing it in an ethical and morally sound way, right? I think beyond that, I wrote a whole book about like our Father's business, so about Christ, right? Jesus Christ, and like it was based on like the book of Luke, where that's like really looking at Christ as like a man or in his humanity. And so if I had to say a role model, like it's that, like, and it's just like, how do you be about your business? And this goes back to like calling, right? In a way where you are focused, but you have the hard conversations, and, how do you approach like really leaning into your life's call and your life's work? Mm-hmm. So if I had to call out like, I guess like a role model that is like practically speaking day to day, what I model my life after is being about my calling in that sort of way. You asked about certifications also. I forgot to answer that. I have a PMP. a PMP, a project management professional, and then a CISSP, Certified Information Systems Security Professional.
Those are certifications. Now, so.
Yes. Oh, the fun.
It is very fun.
That's one that's like a mile wide and an inch deep. And I feel like, I remember when I was like taking the exam, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is security, but gosh, this is not my area. What? Yeah.
It's all encompassing.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, much success with that. Yeah. Yeah. Vote of confidence.
Well, thank you so much for joining today. You don't have a lot of time, so I appreciate you joining. And please let us know where we can follow you and support you.
Yeah. So on social media, you can, I'm on, so SciDeploy and T-Secure are on Instagram and Facebook and X now, I think it is, instead of Twitter, and LinkedIn. So you can find the company pages there, T-Secure, T-C-E-C-U-R-E, SciDeploy, C-Y, and then the word deploy. SciSkills as well is on LinkedIn, so you can find SciSkills on LinkedIn.
Awesome. And I will link your LinkedIn as well, because you're so fun to follow.
Oh, thanks.
You travel quite often.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Good. Thank you again for your time.